This is a Momentum Media production.
Inside Commercial Property with Rethink Investing.
Australia's largest and most comprehensive podcast covering all things commercial investing.
G'day, how you going? Phil Tarrant, co-host of Inside Commercial Property. Hope you're well. In the studio, a very hot studio. It's full of people today, and I know people that work in property, they're normally wearing flashy suits. If you get too close to the flame, they start sparking. It's that warm in here right now. I've got a couple of agents in the studio joining us. We're going to get to them in a moment, but joining me, Scott O'Neill, Director, Rethink Investing. Scott, how are you, mate? You well?
Yeah, very good, very good. Looking forward to this one. Got a couple of the big guns of the commercial world here just to give us a bit of a roundup.
And I'm happy to note they are from Queensland, so they're not wearing suits and they are comfortably attired. Imagine they probably had to get out of their shorts though for the big trip down to the Big Smoke. But what we thought we would do is actually get the ground truth of some agents acting and operating in particular areas where Scott and his team are actively acquiring property with an eye of what's happening today, but an eye towards the future. So trying to understand how they think, what makes them tick, how to best deal with them, how to create the best relationship with them if you're a commercial investor. And Scott, you do a fair bit of buying up in Queensland, if I'm right?
Yeah, so we've purchased probably, it wouldn't be far off, 1,500 deals in Queensland. So high volumes for many years. And these markets are some we've bought 70% of the properties in. So very high, I guess, market share as well. And we buy there because we like the growth stories. We like the yields. That was, kind of day one what it got us there. And then the more you find out, you go, all right, there's actually upside in the rents. And they performed really well through COVID. So, kind of doubled down after that because we just saw how stable things were when other parts of the country were going backwards. And it's been a really good patch for us. And it's a market that I think has a good 10 years ahead of it too. Like we'll go down the
Queensland in general.
And there's some markets which are better than others. But there's no one really out there saying it's got a bad long-term picture.
Yeah. Well, I think we've spoken about it at length on this podcast. We cover a lot on Smart Property Investment. You're tuning into this on the Property Investment Podcast Network, where we've talked about the dynamics of the Queensland market, both from a economic development point of view, a lot of the infrastructure stuff in the pipeline, this intrastate migration, a lot of people from the southern states, New South Wales and Victoria in particular, have decided to call Queensland home. And we all know that commercial property is inherently connected with people, the economic activities that they engage with and the products that they consume. So there's a good reason why Queensland should be able to surge forward as a commercial property location. But we've got two people in the studio, and if you're tuning into this, wherever you're tuning into right now, I know we see a lot of you on your social media. You can watch this full video. It's all over YouTube and all over the place. So I have a one-page brief on this, and I've just scribbled a couple of notes on it, and because I reckon I'm probably going to get these two places wrong and the wrong person connected with it, so I do apologise in advance, gents, but I can be forgiven because the two key markets that we're going to talk about today are both in Queensland. One is Toowoomba and the other one is Townsville. Now, Toowoomba is about 120 kilometres from Brisbane, and Townsville, get ready for it, is 1,400 kilometres from Brisbane. So we're talking about the same state, right? It's a big place, Queensland. Brisbane is closer to Melbourne than what Brisbane is to Cairns, to give some sense for it. So for these people who talk about collective states, you'd be forgiven to thinking they're all the same. We're talking about two places a long, long, long way away. Now, having a chat around Toowoomba, we could probably cover areas of the Sunshine Coast, and then covering areas of Townsville, we can also cover some areas like Mackay and stuff. So our two agents, these guys are both guns. They're from Colliers, which is a good outfit operating in Queensland, also nationally. It'd be a real estate brand a lot of you will be familiar with. You're typically connected in with industrial markets and commercial markets, more so than resi, but the nature of some of these markets that these gents operate within means they also touch a bit of resi as well, and they also touch some other areas. So hailing from Toowoomba is Dan Dewan. Do I get that right? Dewan.
Dewan. Close.
Dewan. See?
Swan with a D.
This is a It's my Queensland accent, right?
Yeah, you know, I'll
it's the inflection points. And Sean McLean, I got that right.
McLaren.
That's it. God.
Like the racing car, I say.
See, how could I get that so wrong? Yeah. It's deliberate, though, just to help you guys settle in.
Extra plug.
To it all. Now, the quick question I've got is that you guys work a lot with Scott O'Neill through real estate transactions. Is he easy to deal with?
He is. I think it's probably started, our relationship with Scott started a few years ago. We were talking about it today, but just essentially we find Rethink to be a pretty good company to deal with in terms of the clients that are associated with them. They seem to be more educated than the average commercial investor. So it just makes the process a little bit smoother and quite an enjoyable experience. So, and they're able to hold their hand and assist the clients really well through due diligence periods and different things like that. So there seems to be a bit of education that are done with the clients. So it makes the process, pretty smooth transaction generally. So it's good.
That's good for you guys as agents, right?
It makes it so much easier when you're dealing with people who know what they're talking about.
Mm.
The little intricacies around buying commercial property, dealing with credible, capable people just makes the whole process so much easier. It's like, and I know we've spoken about this before, it's about like the right solicitor involved makes a big difference. The same with the buyer's agent sort of things. And, there's lots of buyer agent groups out there. Some are good, some are bad. We enjoy spending time, and obviously transacting properties with Rethink because they know what they're doing.
Mm.
They've got a good level of credibility, and that's what it's easier for us to put deals together when we're dealing with somebody who knows what they're talking about.
There's a lot of people tuning into this podcast, gents, who listen to it because they get all this information and they go about doing it themselves, which is cool. I think it's great. The better that we can empower property investors, commercial property investors to make better transactions, I think is good for the sector, is good for the industry, it's good for investors themselves. But they might not like hearing this, but do you think that investors that use buyer's agents get an advantage that direct people don't because of that knowledge, that connectivity?
Look, I think there's dealing with people like Scott and Rethink, they know their markets they're dealing in. They've done their research. They're going to come into things well-informed, and actually certainly, as Sean said there before, the due diligence process, it's extensive. So, I think that should give people confidence knowing that when they're the likes of the people they're dealing with, the deals that are presented, are credible deals that, make sense.
And I spoke to Scott about this earlier when we caught up. The other thing that we're pretty cautious about is if we've got a buyer's agent who's doing a really good job in our market, they've got buyers that are active, they're transacting on properties, well, for that reason, we're not going to put in front of them an investment that we wouldn't recommend highly and that we're not confident about. So there's no point us trying to put something in front of Scott or Rethink that we're, it's a bit dodgy, is it something that we should sell or not? But we're pretty confident in all the deals that we put in front of him because we know that it's a good relationship. We want to look after them, make sure that they're happy clients, and Scott keeps coming back to Townsville or Toowoomba.
So you're saying there's actual genuine equity in the relationship where you're only going to put good deals in front of Scott because
we know very well that Scott and his team have done their work on the clients they're presenting to or about their capability to perform.
Hmm.
And that's half of our job as agents is assessing the buyer as far as their capability actually to complete a contract.
To perform.
Mm.
So there's no point in us going down a long journey. And some of those, due diligence processes can be long and extensive. And, from our point of view, you've got to back the right buyer to make sure a deal transacts too. So, that's the comfortable part with dealing with credible people to make sure deals come together.
And that goes back to the point of there being an advantage using a buyer's agent because Scott's putting people up.
Definitely.
Essentially, the hard work's been done in triaging whether or not this is a real deal buyer. Yeah. That you'll invest more time, energy and effort to get a deal done?
Look, I think a big part of getting a transaction across the line is a lot of education and comfort and knowing the ins and outs. And we touched on this before and off air around people's lack of knowledge around commercial property. And this has been a great podcast for people to be educated in that space. But you're dealing with someone who's actually been through a process and has a greater level of certainty and comfort around being able to complete as opposed to someone who's less educated. And it sort of starts to bring some nervousness into the transaction. And, we've both, I'm sure Sean's the same, we've gone through transactions where you think this is a done deal and through nervousness or, minor things at the end of the day, a deal doesn't get done.
And you could be 60 days or 90 days down the track too.
Mm.
So then you've got the other thing that you've got to factor in is the owner of that property, you've got to factor in them and the outcome that they want. And if you're 3 months down the track and you've got a deal that's kaput, and it's at an end, you've got to start the whole process again. So
that's tough, and you know, we do need to reinforce that that you gentlemen, the agent, works on behalf of the vendor.
100%.
You want to get the absolute, depending, but you want to get the best price possible. But there's other things vendors may need. They might need to move quickly, or they might need to make settlements, or which is all negotiable. But if you need to make the decision to invest in a particular party to proceed on putting a deal together, get a transaction done. If you choose the wrong party, that means it's compromising your ability to get the vendor the satisfaction out of what they want from it, and that compromises your ability of an agent. So
Definitely. It
comes back to the point, you want to invest time, energy and effort in the deals that get done. Mm-hmm. And if it's been largely triaged properly by the fact that you've got a buyer's agent acting and operating in it, it means that deals happen faster, which typically make people happier, and you can get to a conclusion quicker, which removes a lot of stress around it.
Yeah.
And as a buyer's agent, one of the things that's helped our growth over the years is whenever I put an offer to guys like this, it's got to have a real buyer behind it, because there's so many others that go out there and just put offers in to take it off the market.
So you generally have someone that wants to buy. It's not just fishing.
Yeah, I have to. Otherwise, I'd feel like I'm just going to let them down. Imagine I've put an offer down, they get accepted by their vendor. Like, it's going to be an offer that they've had to work at too. Imagine them not completing on that. All of a sudden, they're going to think we're a fake. We've got no real buyers behind it. And it's that ability to connect. And it's the hardest thing in that game, like to actually bring the buyer and the seller together. Or getting the listing's the hardest thing. But the qualified buyer is the key that I think we've got over others, because lots of buyer's agents out there, but how many have multiple buyers at price points that can sort of back up even if the first guy falls over? And we need to get good deals to represent that. But and that's where the relationship goes both ways. We want to make sure our buyers are strong. We're going to represent the buyer. We're not here to get a good price for the vendor. But if we allow our buyer into a deal at the right money, unless something goes wrong, which only then we'll exit the deal, like a bad building report or maybe the tenant's failing or something, we'll get out. But we shouldn't be crashing otherwise.
Yeah. And it goes back to the actual agent. I sort of learned this sort of knocking around the souks of the Middle East for many years. If you're going to buy something, you're going to put an offer in for something, you've got to be ready to back that up with a sale. Because if you say, if someone agrees on a price and all the conditions, you go, no, I don't want to buy anymore, mate, you'll be chased out with machetes, right? The same thing applies to property.
Exactly.
Putting in offers for stuff that you don't have a genuine buyer behind, you know, you will ruin your reputation immediately and you'll be washed out of the market. And agents aren't... Yeah, they can be tough people to deal with sometimes, and that's the nature of the job. But if you can create trust and respect with an agent, the terms really become negotiable. You can lose your reputation pretty quickly with an agent. You'll just get completely whitewashed.
We spoke about this off air again, but same thing. Townsville and Toowoomba markets are not massive. They're not huge. So you've got to be confident that whoever you're dealing with, they've got the ability to perform and to see out a contract. Because if you don't, you're going to have reputational damage with the vendor, with tenants involved and all that sort of thing, and you don't want to have that stress and go through that. So we prefer, and in a perfect world, we want to only deal with informed buyers, educated buyers that know what they're after. If we can do that, it's a smooth transaction for everyone, owners included.
And you know, when I sort of compare markets, Sydney or Melbourne, for example, or Brisbane, Townsville and Toowoomba are smaller markets. Toowoomba would be bigger than Townsville, but you need to eyeball your next clients at the local RSL, the pub or the coffee shop where you see them every day.
It's where you work.
It's where you work. It's your reputation. Yeah. Trying to put a deal together with the wrong buyer can erode that so quickly. So I guess the point is, go and do this stuff yourself. You don't need to be using a buyer's agent for buying commercial property, but there is advantages from it. And that sort of connectivity, would you ever get properties that never see the open market because you know Scott is there and he's got clients ready to go, or some other buyer's agent has clients ready to go? Do you always take, I'm just thinking tactically, do you always take stuff to market, or depending on what the vendor needs, you'll move quickly and just go direct to a buyer's agent?
I think there's a lot of deals in both residential and commercial that are done off market, not in Townsville, Toowoomba, in every market. Mm. And I think if you've got a vendor or an owner that you know wants to transact and you want to know he wants to transact at a certain price, because of the deals that you've done over the years, you'll know, well, actually, there's six buyers already that I know that are that'd move on this particular asset. So there are a lot of off-market deals done. There's an advantage in terms of marketing costs that are saved, time on market and all that sort of thing. And as long as that owner knows that that outcome is the best outcome that they can get, then they're happy to do off-market deals. It's a pretty regular occurrence.
Yeah, look, it is pretty frequently. And look, I think this it's probably a trust factor as well. Mm. You know, it's obviously not every deal's the same. And, you know, obviously, as you said before, our job is to get the best deal for our sellers. Now, sometimes that's on market and it depends on the type of asset, but it obviously depends on their motivation as well. So it's, you know, I suppose it's a trust factor from the point of view. They're relying on people like Sean and myself to give them the right advice, you know, around market value. You know, and if there's an opportunity off market, which might be, you know, a comparable outcome for them, you know, then it's up to us obviously to give them that advice that, you know, we think that's a good way to go. But look, a lot of the time it's their discretion, it's their motivation, it depends on which way they want to go. Yeah,
and a good agent will give the vendor those options because, you know, we obviously talk a lot about buying property, but the other side of the equation for commercial property is selling property, right? There's a point in time where you want to realise the value in your assets. So this is where a really good agent can work with you tactically to understand what your drivers are. Okay, do you want to do a quick deal? Do you want to do it? Do you want to be anonymous? Do you want to keep it out of the records? Do you want to create market tension? All this sort of stuff.
We were chatting about this before too. The other thing to, you know, from an agent's point of view, both Dan and I have been in it long term. Dan's a lot more experienced than I am, but I've been doing it for 12 years. Dan, I think, has been involved with Colliers for 14 years. We're not here to fly by night just to do as many deals as you can in 12 months and never be seen again. When you're dealing in a market in Townsville or Toowoomba, you've got to do the right thing with the vendors, with the buyers in those markets, because if you don't, you'll be found out pretty quickly and you're not going to have any longevity in the game. Yeah. And if you want to have longevity, you've got to deal. You've got to do the right thing by your vendor. You've got to do the right thing by the buyers and you'll be well looked after in that industry. So,
see, a big thing is too, and this is getting a little bit ahead of the game, but, you know, a lot of the time we like to be involved in the property post settlement. So from a management point of view and ongoing.
Yeah,
so, you know, that's where it sort of comes back to making sure, you know, what's being presented is accurate, you know, and, you know, when a deal's being presented, it's actually something that's good commercial deal that makes sense. Because it might, you know, down the track, I mean, the last thing you want to get into is, you know, a rent negotiation with a renewal that, you know, rents are dropping or, you know, markets change. So
that's a good point. So at what percentage of managements would you get acting on behalf of the buyer once they've acquired an asset?
Oh, look, it varies. It really does. I mean, it depends on, you know, geographically where they're located. I mean, we were talking about this before. Some people like to be able to drive past, touch and see an asset, be actively hands-on involved. There's other people who, you know, are purely there for the dollars and cents part of the transaction and, you know, happy just to see the money hit the tin, you know, once a month and, you know, leave the day-to-day, you know, ongoing, you know, involvement of an asset to someone else. So,
but the point being that if you market and sell an asset on one basis and that person chooses to use you to manage the property, it's got to stack up, right?
Well, exactly.
One of the same. One of the same. There is a thousand ways we can take this particular podcast, Scott, and thanks for bringing Dan and Sean and having a chat about this because, you know, you often understand the psyche and the way in which resi agents work, but commercial guys are a bit of an enigma, you know, they typically, you know, they're not as flashy as the residential guys. How do you guys find Colliers? You've been with it a long time. You must be a good outfit to be part of.
Oh, look, it's a great, credible brand. Mm. You know, 14 years I've had with Colliers next month. You know, as far as a partner office with Colliers. So look, it's, you know, it's one of the biggest commercial agencies, you know, nationally, if not internationally. So, I mean, it's, that brings credibility with what we do on a day-to-day basis. It gives our buyers and sellers confidence, you know, knowing that the credibility of the brand they're dealing with. And certainly it's an advantage for us in the market for sure.
Mm. Yeah. And I'd say the same thing. I've been with Colliers. I don't know anything else, but I've been with them 12 years and I find that, you know, my boss would like me saying this, but I think they're the best agency in every area where they're based. You know, I would say that we're the best agency in Townsville and, you know, we have the most experienced agents and it's always been good to deal with. You know, we always have good support from Colliers and it's a pretty good organisation to work for.
What's the competitive relationship like with people up there? You're putting sort of bananas in each other's exhaust pipes to win listings and stuff. It's typically quite collegiate, right? Because you need to understand the market, but competition fierce in Toowoomba?
Oh, there's always competition, but you know, on the flip side of things, you've got to be able to work with the other agencies too. Yeah, we as much as we've got majority market share up there, we don't control everything. So I mean, when we see good opportunities come across other people's desks, and we've got clients that we've tried to look after that.
Yeah.
We try and work with the other agents.
Types and what conjunctions, I guess you call it.
Yeah, we do that sort of stuff. We do that with other agents as well. We try and you're better off in a market, like I said, where it's not massive. If you try and work with every agent, you have a relationship with the other agents. You're always going to be ahead. So
we see it first, like markets like Brisbane, for example, it's full on there. You know, like we've had in one day, 5 agencies send the same property to us within the hour. Like it's a race, you know, because like they'll do like an open listing and I don't know, like that's one of my biggest frustrations. Why would an owner go to 5 different agencies? I don't even know how they do it.
Everyone gets the listing and then they've got to shop it around.
And then they know we'll buy it if it's a specific yield and that. And then I play this rule, whoever sends it to me first, I'm not going to play God with people's commissions. It's like whoever comes in first, we'll honour that. And then they race it to you. So it all just like, you know, went one after the other.
Do you say that XYZ has already sent me this property?
Yeah. Because otherwise games can be played. Like some might lie that they've got exclusive agency agreement. I've had that. And then you take their word on it and then you find out that that wasn't true. So then you don't trust that agent again. It's pretty brutal in some markets. Townsville's pretty full, and I haven't seen it as much in Toowoomba.
Townsville's pretty competitive, is it?
There's a couple of guys out there that go hard. But stock is low across the country, and Queensland's no different. So that's the problem. Everyone's kind of fighting over less stock because once the market's kind of cooled down, smart vendors know that, I could probably get more in 12 months' time, or they got nowhere better to put their money is a big problem. So, there's just less transactions happening. So everyone's fighting harder to get last year's revenue.
Yeah, that's right. And if listings are down, it's inherently subdued if you're a real estate agent, right?
Because
you make your money off commission. So let's talk then. Let's do a couple of, because I'm intrigued about how local markets operate. A bit of a wrap up on, we'll kick off with you, Sean, in Townsville. For those of you who aren't familiar with Townsville, it's about 4 hours south of Cairns and Port Douglas on the obviously on the coastline of Queensland, as I said beforehand, 1,400 kilometres from Brisbane, right? So that's not a day trip. That's a long – it's probably just down the road for you blokes, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
I
would say Townsville is geographically located right in the middle of Cairns, Mackay, and we got Mount Isa out to the west of us.
So it's like an economic centre, right?
It's the unofficial capital of North Queensland. People from other places might not like me saying that, but it's definitely the capital of North Queensland.
Are you born and bred up there?
Born and bred in North Queensland, not from Townsville originally, from the Tablelands originally, from up in Atherton.
Okay.
You're going to have to give me geography.
How far is that from Townsville?
4 hours.
Okay.
3¾ if you get a good run.
Yeah.
But I'm from there originally, moved to Townsville for uni. And, sort of found myself in commercial property.
What did you study?
Business marketing.
Yeah. And how'd you end up being an agent?
Oh, the short version is I tried to sell my boss, his old man, a car when I was working at Mike Carney Toyota and Lexus of Townsville. And I did that unsuccessfully. He bought an Audi instead of a Lexus, but just kept coming back to see me for coffees for a couple of weeks afterwards. And eventually I was like, Graham,
what's he up to?
What are you doing, mate? Like, why do you keep coming back in here? You got an Audi, you don't need a car anymore. But then he said, well, my son runs this business and this is what he does. And do you want to have a coffee with him? And I said, oh, well, that sounds good. Monday to Friday, don't have to work weekends. And, he promised me squillions of dollars. So, of course.
So you're working weekends at the car, trying to flog cars, and now it's gentlemen's hours in commercial property, Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
Duck to water, how'd you find sort of moving into commercial property rather than sort of selling cars?
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good. I enjoyed it. It was a good thing because I have an interest in property, always have. You know, I've bought properties young and I enjoy it, whereas to be truthful in cars, I didn't. I don't own a luxury car. That's probably one difference from commercial guys versus resi guys. We don't really care about what sort of car we drive and we don't have to get around in flash Mercedes or anything like that.
You sell that to all the miners, do you, out there?
Mate, we just drive whatever car we can and I wasn't passionate about that, whereas real estate was a lot, it was just something that I enjoyed a lot more. So, it was I started in 2011. It was a pretty tough market. The GFC was probably just starting to bite then in Townsville. We were a bit off the pace for a lot of the metro areas, but it was good grounding.
Tell me about your first property you sold.
first property I sold, I probably can't even really remember it, but it might have been a block of land at 37 Civil Road, which I remember transacting for a fella there. I think that was one of the early ones and I was pretty happy about it, but just a little industrial block of land. It's probably got about 26 little storage units on it now. Yeah. But
are you happy you landed in the commercial sort of realm rather than resi?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've probably had opportunities to go in the resi world, but I don't want to work. I don't want to do open houses on weekends and stuff. I choose to follow my kids around playing, you know, watching them play games of soccer and footy and stuff instead. So
what's the spread on commercial properties? What's sort of the cheapest? Just I'm trying to get a sense of the Townsville market. I really want to drill down. What's the cheapest properties? What's the most expensive properties?
You'd find that the most affordable properties are probably your owner-occupier properties. So like someone wants to buy a warehouse for their electrical business or plumbing business and you can get them entry-level properties maybe around that 300 grand mark.
Okay.
There's not many of them in the market at the moment, but, you know, it might be 300, 400 grand and, you know, they could go up to millions of dollars really. Okay. So Townsville, our population's nearly on 200,000 people, as I said before, geographically located in the middle of North Queensland, and we're supported by, we've got the biggest hospital in Northern Australia, we've got James Cook University, Central Queensland University, we've got Townsville Port, which is one of the biggest ports in Australia, we've got the biggest defence barracks in Australia, so we've got a really good mix of, you know, a diverse economy, and that makes, for geographically and the diverse economy, it makes it quite attractive. And I was sort of saying to Scott before, on the back of COVID, that's made the Townsville market, seems to have put the Townsville market and regional markets up in lights. I think people sort of woke up during COVID and said, why are we living or doing business in these metro areas where we're busting our ass in Melbourne and Sydney trying to get returns or make money when they can go regionally and, you know, less competition, better return on their money and, you know, just a really good investment. So we've found that Townsville, and I think Dan would say the same thing about Toowoomba, people really started looking at regional markets. We felt in sort of 2020, 2019 maybe, that it started to come more and more on their radar.
So outside of the sort of mum and dad SMEs who own the property that they use for the purpose of business, like who's most invested in the local market by way of sort of who are the investors? Are they out-of-towners?
Well, traditionally we would have local investors. So, you know, in Townsville at the moment, I would say that you can sort of get yields between 6.5% and 7.5%.
Yeah.
And we would have had, prior to, say, 2020, a lot of that would be local people, maybe North Queensland-based investors that had taken up the investment opportunities. But I feel like since COVID sort of hit in 2020, a lot of the buyers that we have, we're servicing a lot of buyers that are interested in Townsville from southeast, you know, whether it be from Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, where they're saying, you know what, we've got money, we've got the ability to invest in product. Why am I doing it down here where it's 5% when I can go up to Townsville and do it at 8%,
yeah.
You know? And that's gradually tightened. We were probably selling deals at 8.5% net a few years ago. And now it's coming down to, you know, might be doing stuff around 6.5, subject to the lease term, the quality of the tenant and the location of the asset. But
So without locals owning the investment properties, that's sort of removing some money out of the local markets because it's going down south into Brizzy, et cetera. But the fact that you're attracting sort of money from outside the area into commercial properties must have had an inflection point on prices, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like originally we might have been doing deals at 8.5%.
And that's just purely because it's just new money's coming in.
Yeah, that's because there wasn't as many buyers maybe and it was not as competitive. But we've found that the yields have certainly contracted and they're sort of, you know, for the right asset we can get below 6%. Obviously a little bit higher now. We've spoken about that today as well where, you know, with the interest rate rise and all that sort of thing, there's got to be a bit of give on that return. So they're coming up slowly. But, we've definitely found that there's a lot more buyers in the market. And the problem that we have in Townsville right now is we just don't have that investment stock. Yeah, so we've had a pretty good 2 or 3 year period where we've done well with any investment type sales that we've had and we've transacted them on the market through Rethink Investing and other organisations as well. There's other buyers out there, there's local buyers. But what we found is that sometimes buyers' agents will see better value in an asset at a certain return more so than local buyers. you know, we might say, hey, look, guys, this is available. It's a 5-year lease and it's 7.5% net. We might have some people locally saying, well, I'm not going to pay that for it. Whereas other buyers who might be based in Sydney and Melbourne be like, well, heck, I haven't seen a 7.5% return for years. So they're straight on it. So they just see they see value in our market probably a little bit more than what locals do at the moment.
So what's good stock up there right now? Is it industrial mainly is where the smart money's going?
Look, we probably will have interest in investment stock across all the different factors, whether it be commercial, retail, industrial. It just comes down to the tenant. So all those investment classes will be of appeal, but it just comes down to the quality of the tenant, the length of the lease, where it's located. So we've done a lot in industrial over the years, but we've also done pretty well in commercial as well. Just subject to, it really just comes down to the type of tenant and who they are and what the lease term's like. So the hardest thing that we have at the moment, and Dan's the same, is just trying to, that stock that we've sold is trying to replenish that stock and get other stock on the market because the demand's there. We just don't have the ability at the moment. We just really need to, we either need to build that stock and create sort of tenant interest, or we need to try and look at a different approach. And Scott and I spoke about that earlier, where maybe it's at the moment where we look at opportunities where there's a vacancy in a particular warehouse, and if you can get at the right price point, well, then you take the risk that with a bit of work and a bit of love and care for that particular property, you can then invest, you know, like get a tenant for it and turn it around.
So sort of manufacturing dormant stock into productive stock. What else needs to happen to get vendors to sell? There's got to be a point where the prices outweigh the attractiveness of holding, right? And but the thing is, if you're not getting the transactions, you're not going to get the uplift in pricing. So a cash flow too.
Our market then fluctuates a little bit. When sales start to be a little bit harder to get, then all of a sudden there's more of a focus on leasing. So then there's that leasing market then becomes more active, and we're doing a lot of industrial leases, commercial leases, retail leases. And then you might go through a period of 12 months, 24 months where that's your main thing, but then that'll turn around because those leases that you put in place, you know, 12 months or 2 years earlier, those owners might say, you know what, it's now time for me to sell because I'm changing my personal circumstances. I want to retire. I want to do this. And those properties come back around. But that's that whole importance of making sure you maintain a good relationship with the landlord, because in 3 years' time, that landlord could become a seller. So you need to make sure that you look after him with that lease and then hopefully get the product, you know, get the asset for sale a few years later.
So how do you know you've done a good job at the end of a deal? How do you sort of go, yeah, that was a good one?
I think.
And how do you celebrate it?
I think you just know through, well, if you don't do a good job, you normally get feedback.
Yeah.
You know, when you do a poor job, you generally get feedback on a poor job before you get feedback on a good job.
Normally from the vendor.
Yeah. But I think if you maintain good relationships with a buyer or a tenant or even a landlord, you know that through the fact that they're continually calling you, the fact that you're catching up with them socially or whatever. So in Townsville, you can see them and you see them all the time, different people, because it's not a very, you know, it's not a massive city. You bump into them at the footy and stuff like that. And you know pretty quickly if they're unhappy with the job that you've
done. They'll tell you, right?
Yeah.
Queensland. Wait, culturally, what's it like sort of acting and operating up in far north Queensland? You've got to change how you do stuff. I'm sure I can come up with a whole bunch of stereotypes about northern Queenslanders, but I'll choose not to at the moment for the safety of my life. But
With no joke, there's like dealing with commercial agents, they are professional. Like that's one of the best parts of my job. Like they are not just about marketing themselves like the residential guys or, you know, it's a different vibe because they understand business and they are generally involved in the leasing. And if you are involved in leasing, you understand business because you got to understand the business needs and then find the space for them and then understand the competitive landscape. Like it's pretty complex. So these guys speak our language. So there's actually no culture divide, really. Like they all have the same accent. They're very similar to the guys in Perth as they are in Hobart. Some of the Sydney office guys can be a little bit of a different breed, but they're still, I guess they're all businessmen, which is easy.
Yeah, and they all want the deal done, right? They want satisfied stakeholders, and because when you think about a commercial equation or investors, you don't get probably mainly investors rather owner occupied stuff. So you've got a vendor, you've got the tenant, and you've got got the buyer, right? You got to keep everyone sweet.
You got to maintain really good relationships with them. And sometimes, you know, if you don't maintain a good relationship with a tenant, then that's going to cost you. It's going to cost you down the track. It's going to cost you when you're doing an inspection to sell the property, or you're not even going to get the opportunity to sell
just
the property.
Just make your life hard.
Yeah,
right?
Because you've made, you've upset them, so they're pissed off and they'll report that back
to
you.
What do you charge for management up in your neck of the woods?
Oh, I don't get involved too much in the management side of things. Yeah. And again, there's so many variables. It comes down to the value of the asset, how long the lease is, how much management will be involved in that particular one. But I think they probably vary between 5 to 7%. On that sort of percentage. Mm. And it just comes down to how big the asset is, how many tenants are involved in that particular asset as well, and how much management's required. And we've probably gone through a period where we've previously had to knock back management, you know, inquiries sometimes because we just, with staff and that, when we went through COVID, there was just, it was really difficult to get staff. And it's not my staff, but for my boss, for him to recruit staff and that. Mm. So we probably went through a period where we couldn't really take on too much in the way of management, or we had to be selective about it. But that's really probably turned the corner a little bit now. Yeah. We've got a good crew of management, a management team who look after staff, and we're in a position where we can take on the better management properties that we sell.
Yeah, you want to pick and choose, right? Because you want the right stuff. Give me a sense. Have you got any examples of couple of properties that you might have on the market up there right now in Townsville, like just to give us a view or a lens of what to look at?
I can give you an example of maybe a couple of recent deals. We don't have too much in the way of investment stock on the market. That's part of the problem. That's what we're sort of working towards.
A couple of recent deals are good.
Yeah, so maybe a couple of recent ones that we're involved with Rethink. Scott and I were chatting about this earlier, but we had an 875 square metre building that was leased on a 4-year lease to an Australian national tenant. So it was in a good complex, so an industrial complex. So it was modern tilt slab, well located on the highway in Townsville. That particular complex was built well and that sort of thing. So with a 4-year lease in place, it was done at quite a good net rental. So in terms of, I would say that it was under rented. So it had about $75,500 in net rental on a 4-year lease. That was transacted and purchased at a 6.16% return, which is probably pretty sharp yield. But as I said to Scott, and even the valuers involved, because of the way that that rental was probably below market, it's got a lot of upside to it. And it's just a really strong lease profile with the particular tenant. So that then sells at sort of $1.225 million. But that's a really good property long term. If there was an issue with that particular tenant, you could go, well, you know what, that's got a great office component to it, great warehouse components, well built. It'd be easy to replace that tenant, particularly at that type of rental.
Mm. Yeah, so the rent on that was 82 a square metre, which is about 30% below what it should be in that market. Yeah. So we copped, in our opinion, a lower yield for that market. But there's 30% upside as soon as that tenant goes or there's a market review. So it's an absolute no-brainer at $1.2 million. Yeah, there's ups, like significant upside once that's sorted.
And imagine rentals are pretty tight up there as well, so they're just going to have to stay where they are, right? So
yeah.
They have to just
And they're not building as well.
There might be a scope, and I hope there's a scope. Even in the 12 years that I've been doing it, I feel like the rents haven't really changed that much, but I hope that if we're not able to replace the stock because of the cost of construction and even with lending being quite tight, if we don't replenish that stock and there's not new stock built, you would hope that that then has an effect on the rental rates, which
it would
be
need
good.
To, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the expectation. So,
So that's the Townsville market. Dan, you could probably say all similar things for Toowoomba. It's a long, long way from Townsville. How does the market differ?
Oh, look, we're probably very similar metrics around what's, you know, the movers and the reasons, obviously, market shifting. The Toowoomba market's probably a little bit different. Well, I'm probably a little bit biased too, mind you. I think it's the best regional market in Queensland, if not Australia.
You're meant to say that. If you don't say that, you're not going to be very good at your job.
But look, Toowoomba's got lots of things happening. And I think that's one of the things, to be honest, I actually feel a lot of people outside the Toowoomba market know more about what's happening in the Toowoomba market than some of the locals. You know, the diversity of the economy, you know, obviously Toowoomba's, you know, background's agriculture. You know, it's obviously, you know, it's the head of the capital of Darling Downs, essentially. It's, you know, a lot of people will retire into Toowoomba as opposed to going into Brisbane. So a big catchment area, Western Queensland, you know, out as far as Roma, you know, the Charleville sort of corridor, you know, all seem to sort of, you know, gravitate towards Toowoomba. So agricultural is probably one of the biggest drivers there. But off the side of that, obviously in the last, you know, few years and making resurgences around that gas and oil and gas sector, you know, out through as far as Roma and so on in that area, that has a positive influence. The infrastructure projects in and around Toowoomba has been massive over the last few years. Toowoomba Second Range Crossing, inland rail is going to be a significant change for us as well as far as the Toowoomba market's concerned. You know, we've got a strong health field in Toowoomba. So there's a massive amount of positivity around what's happening in Toowoomba, you know, and it's led by private, you know, enterprise, you know, the likes of the Wagner family with their, you know, airport, you know, privately owned, first airport, you know, privately developed airport
since Well Camp.
First private airport developed since Tullamarine. You know, there's groups like FKG out there, you know, have got strong, you know, in industrial presence, you know, Interlink SQ. I mean, there's an intermodal hub that they're dealing on the existing Western Rail Line, which will get connectivity into the Port of Brisbane. So there's a massive amount happening out in that area, and it's going to have a really positive influence on the balance of the market. And price point is probably one of the things that's a contributing factor, particularly around that industrial space, in actually attracting tenants. So, you know, it's one of those things at the current time, you know, with everything that's happening, particularly in that southeast Queensland corner, Brisbane market particularly, I think that's really an opportunity for Toowoomba, you know, to take to that next step and go to the next level.
And this is investors priced out of Brizzy or investors seeking other assets and or businesses looking to capitalise on a surging local economy to base themselves out of Toowoomba.
Well, it's probably all of the above, yeah, to be honest. I mean, you know, business, you know, we were talking about industrial land prices before we came in here, and well, you know, land prices hitting sort of $700-$800 a square metre Brisbane market, well, you know, comparable price point in Toowoomba is $120 a square metre for developed bench land ready to, okay, to an industrial space. You know, that's the largest stuff out of, you know, the Well Camp Air Hub, the hub. So, I mean, that's a point of difference, you know, and add in all the amenity that Toowoomba provides and the livability and the lifestyle. You know, that's, I think, one of the bigger factors that's, you know, attracting, you know, people to the Toowoomba market from a business point of view.
Mm.
And I think the flip side of that, you know, that all those elements gives investors massive amount of confidence in the region. You know, when there's the amount of money being spent, particularly from a private point of view in that Toowoomba area, it underpins, you know, the stability in the market. You know, I hate sort of referring back to, you know, things like the GFC, but, you know, the GFC, you know, for Toowoomba wasn't as significant as it was in a lot of other markets. And I think it's a big part of that is because we don't have a lot of the big institutional owners. Mm. You know, we don't have the big players in town that have, you know, heavily leveraged off assets in Toowoomba. It's private wealthies, it's private organisation that underpins the Toowoomba market. And I think that's one of its greatest strengths, you know, providing stability. It's potentially, you know, a negative element of things too, in that, you know, it's you know, probably a market which probably isn't as proactive and progressive as other areas because of that localisation. But we've got some great businesses there. You know, we mentioned those before, like the likes of FKG and Wagner's particularly, you know, with what they're doing in the Toowoomba market, you know, to go and essentially spec an airport, you know, and build it in 19 months. You know, it's now an international, you know, airport. You know, we have flights, you know, primarily around freight. There's no passenger movements internationally, but they ship freight internationally on a weekly basis out of Toowoomba.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people don't realise
that. You're still striking distance to Brizzy, right? You know, and
well, look, I drove down from Brisbane this morning to Brisbane this morning to get the flight down, and it's, you know, hour and a half, hour, 40 minutes, and you're on a plane. But we've also got the connectivity of the local airport too, which a lot of people are attracted to. Mm. You know, pick the right day and you can fly direct out of, you know, out of Toowoomba into Melbourne, Sydney, Townsville, across the pond now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the connectivity of the Toowoomba market and the livability actually is something that, you know, is advancing it to the next level as well.
I have never been to Toowoomba.
And well, you should,
I think I'm going to have to get there. And I've never been north of Bundaberg either. So
wash your mouth out, Phil.
Yeah, I know.
Wash
your mouth out.
Two very good markets.
I call myself a proud Australian. So yeah. I think myself and Scott are going to have to get on the road because – you know, it's all academic to me, right? But to the point, well, if I'm a commercial property investor, it should just be academic, right? Like, you know, I'd like to actually immerse myself in these markets to get a feel for it because you can tell the stories around it. You know, and you look at Toowoomba and you look at Townsville, you talk about Toowoomba and the investment going into it, these local area dynamics, which is driven by private enterprise, which is supporting stuff, complemented or supplemented with major infrastructure work like inland rail. Mm. And then you look at Townsville, and just today they've just announced the big defence strategic review, and they said they're going to be prioritising development of northern cities, which is supporting of the defence strategic system, which is brilliant. It's brilliant for Townsville. So it means that he's going to start getting, you're going to start getting more government money into it, attracting people into it, developing the defence force, which creates everything connected with it. How much does this matter when you're assessing these locations, Scott? So imagine it's pretty important, right? Like long-term economic growth because commercial property is connected with.
Yeah, so one of the great things about my job is I get to see all the different rental markets for like assets across the country. And we got active in both these markets back in 2018. So that's ahead of the, you know, when things started going. And my main reason was the rents were cheap. So let's just talk industrial. Like they were $80 a square meter for sheds. And Brisbane was like $120. And you know, you're just getting larger assets for the same money. It just made sense. And we were buying way below replacement cost because the GFC, I think they just stopped building a lot of the stuff because it wasn't economically viable. And yeah, basically the existing stock was just priced well. And the yields were, like Sean brought a good point up, like we were seeing value in the yields that the locals weren't because they're still stuck at 2 years ago looking at their comparable sales, a bit like we would in Sydney, going, oh, that's what the price was. And you get fixated on trying to replicate last year's deal, but they don't know what's coming from the ripple effect. We do. We're actually causing the ripple effect in some markets, and then that goes into the next market. And that, like that value identity is really what got us into those markets. It was just cheap from a leasing point of view and a buying point of view, and the yields made sense. So, and then you look at the overall economy because you don't want to buy in a one-horse town, you know, that's backed by, you know, one mine. That's not going to be a
fun
game.
Don't do that. If there's one thing in commercial property, don't do that.
No. But Toowoomba and Townsville and many of the other larger cities up there, like we love things backed by agriculture, love things backed by defence. You know, that's not going anywhere. Mm. Defence is going to grow massively.
Like, large ports, large hospitals, universities and all that sort of stuff.
And they're not tourist towns, these, as well. So, like, we're not as big in Cairns, for example, because they really struggled over COVID. You know, the vacancies up there, like most assets, if there's got 10 tenancies in it, you know, three will be vacant. That's a good case. You know, like Townsville, you're getting 9 or 10 out of 10 in terms of, you know, when you buy it, it's fully occupied. Toowoomba's probably even stronger, I'd say.
And with Toowoomba, Dan, do you sort of extrapolate out from Toowoomba? Do you look at the Sunshine Coast and Brizzy? Is that your realm as well?
Look, we've got a Sunshine Coast office. Okay. Nick Downley in Sunshine Coast runs that team down there. Look, to give you some commentary around, I suppose, our market and some of those markets in and surrounding, I mean, we're probably, you know, we've seen, I think, you know, the likes of Scott's team have seen value in Toowoomba, obviously, you know, in softer yields as well, but we've maintained some yield, you know, from even with interest rate rises. So, I mean, if a good quality asset in Toowoomba is probably in that, you know, mid six range, probably similar to that Townsville market. You know, if you look further west, I mean, as you go out towards that Roma, Chinchilla, you know, Dalby sort of market, you know, heading out, you're going to probably see better value, but probably, you know, higher level of risk to obviously offset that value too on a yield play. Sunshine Coast, actually talking to Nick earlier today, look, they're seeing, you know, still some tight yields down there, industrial yields in the sort of mid to lower 5% yield range still. So, and they're, you know, good blue chip, you know, standard industrial assets, but nothing sort of too expensive either, so that sub $5-6 million price point. So, yeah, but we've got a fair coverage. I mean, you know, between, you know, the partner offices with Colliers and our Brisbane and Gold Coast offices, you know, we do cover a fair part of Queensland. You know, if we don't, we know people who can.
So what's like being an agent in Toowoomba? Like you racking up K's on your car, driving at the Roma and Chinchilla and all those sort of places?
Look, to be honest, Phil, we don't probably, you know, venture too far out into that market unless it's, you know, it's a specific asset or it's a tenant-driven requirement.
Okay.
Or a really good owner.
Probably. Or a really good owner. Yeah, look, relationships. I mean, you know, Sean touched on this before. You know, we're in a market that's strongly relationship-driven. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, from a buyer and seller point of view. You know, it's like as Sean said before, you can be, you know, talking business with someone and you can be, you know, seeing them at the school, you know, rugby event on the weekend. So, you know, Toowoomba's a small place. Yeah. You know, reputation's important, you know, and obviously, you know, that's part of where the business stability comes from. So looking at, you know, doing business in Toowoomba, it's, you know, as I said, it's relationship driven. You know, there's lots of good opportunities and you've got to leverage those relationships to get the best deals for people you deal with. So.
And Sean, do you get outside of Townsville very often? You sort of get to Mackay?
Not really, no. Like we deal with the other partner offices a little bit, so we've done a little bit in Cairns over the years with those guys, but we try to not step on other people's toes to some extent. So if there's a deal or a really good client that we deal with in Cairns, we'll generally just get on the phone of the guys in Cairns and say, hey.
That's like 4 hours. You know, 100%. I've got to keep putting that back in context for me. Like 4 hours from Sydney. So
it's almost Macquarie.
Yeah, it's a completely different market. You know?
Well, I just, listening to Dan talk about his, drive in from Brisbane, one of the places close to us is Charters Towers. It's 135 Ks west. That's, a good hour, 20 minutes. I've just recently done a deal out there, or I'm hoping to, if Lucy listens to this, she should go unconditional soon. But that purely just came through an existing relationship, and that was just a family thing where they were friends with mum and dad. They were out there. They maybe were a tad frustrated with the agent's ability to do something out there. So it'd be the first property I've sold out there, but only because there was a demand or an existing relationship. And we said, well, look, we'll come out and give you a hand, and it's worked out reasonably well. But you don't... Yeah, it's pretty hard.
It's got to be the right asset.
That's right.
We certainly operate in a broad market.
Yeah.
But, it's got to be a good quality asset that we know that's either saleable or leasable.
Yeah. And if I had to summarise this discussion and the common thread through everything is relationships, right?
Mm.
It's a people-driven business. Yes, the numbers and the fundamentals and assets is key, but to actually get a deal done is a commercial transaction. It's imperative. Like, you guys are good operators. You're the best in your game in your respective markets, but it comes back to relationships, And imagine there's a lot of slash and burn merchants out there who just never get an eye or get a look in just because you just don't want to deal with
them. Yeah, I feel like those people probably have a short lifespan.
They're probably not tuning into this, though.
Yeah, we've got a blacklist of agents that you'll never go near.
Do you actually have a blacklist?
Because they rush a sale and – like Sean mentioned before, like, you got to really check the numbers when you present a deal. Due diligence on an agent side's almost the key.
So at this point, do you think it's your job to catch out an agent not putting together real numbers?
Well, or I imagine these are your blacklist people, so right? Yes, yeah. So it's all on us always. If we miss something or the buyer, like, it's buyer beware. That's the whole point of this. That's why you got to due diligence. But a good agent, and all the big branded ones are good. It's more like your risk when you get a resi guy, try to swoop over and do something, and he doesn't know how to factor in land tax and maintenance allowances and stuff like that, or they don't disclose the tenant hasn't been paid. We had one last week. There was a tenant not paying for the last 9 months, and they would have known that, but they just simply put it in front of our nose. We hadn't dealt with them much before. Hoping we'd miss it.
But they must know that you'll find out.
Maybe they didn't. Maybe they're just hoping.
But Phil, often they're only thinking about that one deal. That's the problem. Mm. They're only thinking about that one deal, and they think, well, if that particular property is worth $2 million, they're only thinking about the commission on that one deal. They're not thinking about what happens in 6 months or 12 months' time. Mm. That's the problem.
So good agents then largely package up the properties appropriately, and what you get given is largely what the real story is.
Yeah, within 2 to 3%. There's a little bit of variance. It's like if you've got a shopping complex and there's 10 tenants, the insurance might be out of date and little things like that. And then
there's no malice. There's no nefarious reason for doing it. It's just
never
not current.
Sometimes the only reason that might happen is if a particular owner has just given you old information or it's not quite up to date. That's generally where it comes
down. But you guys must vet it, though. Like, when you get information, because, again, it's back to your reputation, what you've got to put out there, you've got to vet it.
And, the flip side of this is, obviously the due diligence that the buyers do. From our point of view, we've got to – nothing frustrates a buyer more than having partial information. Because unless it's there complete to start with and you're still waiting for information to come through, that just frustrates people.
You must have alarm bells where you go, I don't want to be selling this property for this person.
Well, a lot of the time you'll hold off going to market until you've got all the information, because you know very well you've put in front of a good, credible buyer that's ready to go and you haven't got all the information in hand. They'll get frustrated. They'll go on to the next deal that's ready to go, that's more thorough around what the information they're getting, and you're just doing yourself an injustice. So, we've said quite often to sellers, let's hold off. Let's make sure we've got all the information ready to go, because when we go to market, we want complete information.
It's all about integrity. Integrity in the deal, integrity in the numbers, integrity in the buyer, integrity in the seller, integrity in the agent.
Yep.
It sounds so easy.
I like to use the expression. I think it's my boss's expression, but you can kill shear a sheep 100 times. You can only kill it once.
Mm.
And that's a bit of a classic with commercial real estate. You might go
in
thinking,
Queensland, man.
Yeah.
It's very North Queensland.
It's probably a Tassie one, actually. We don't have many sheep up in North Queensland. But, you just don't, you can't go doing a deal, or you might do one deal. And if you just piss off that particular owner, whatever, you'll never see them again. You'll never do that deal again. You'll never deal with that tenant again. And you've cost, you might have made money in that particular deal,
yeah,
but you don't know what the future cost is.
You're not going to have longevity.
Yeah. So put a Scott aside for a moment, because Scott represents buyers. Just say if you're trying to do this yourself, right, and you're going, okay, I really like the idea of Toowoomba or Townsville. I want to start getting to know the agents and that sort of stuff. Where do you start? You just call one of you guys up and go, hey, I'm an investor. I'm ready to buy. What do you got? Is that pretty much the extent
of it? That's where most people's discussion starts.
Yeah. Yeah,
but not nine times out of ten, probably internet based. They'll be flipping through after hours, you know, watching a bit of TV, flipping through, you know, some of those platforms and shooting off a few inquiries. That's where a lot of the inquiry starts.
They narrow their search. They say, okay, well, if I'm looking for an investment property and my budget's between the classic, to be truthful, is the $500 to $1 million. Yeah. We get a lot of those phone calls. I don't know how many I've had over the years, but be hundreds. Yeah, I'm looking for a commercial investment property under $1 million and at 8% net return. And I was like, well, shit.
I thought it was 10%.
Yeah. I said, well, I can add you to the list. It's a very long list and it's impossible to get that particular asset. But that's generally how they start. And they might search for it and then all of a sudden they don't find any. Yeah. Or there's that one property that might meet certain parameters, and then when they call you off it, there's generally reasons why it might be in that parameter, because it's – yeah, mostly vacant or whatever. So you're looking for a different type of buyer.
So there must be people who finally give you a call and go, I'm sick of this. I've been looking for ages. I never get the properties that they want. I hear they exist, but I can never get a hold of one. You know, again, trying to get some, you know, off-market stuff is the best stuff, right?
Look, yes, there would be a few of those. More of our clients come from, I think we've created the market, a lot of it, like educated people about commercial property. Because there's this stat out, which I'm quoting a bit at the moment because I saw it on the ABS. There's 550,000-odd residential transactions per year. Commercial's about 20,000, you know, it was, you know, 17, 16, and then last year there was a bit more. So call it 20,000 per year sales. Imagine if that residential market knows that, you know, like, and they're cottoning on to the returns are better. The capital growth is actually better over the last 30 years too. You know, that's an amazing stat.
Even though commercial property, to be fair, is a bit on the nose these days for some people, they're highly leveraged, right? They're hurting as much as resi people.
Yeah.
And we've covered this off.
Yeah, but they're lower debt. Then they've got most people are still covering their interest twice over. Like, you've got to forget, these guys aren't 80% leveraged. They're like 50 or less. So, more people are coming into this market. So they hear the podcast, you know, we've got books. They, you know, people are getting forced out of residential because their broker said they can't do any more. So accountants say, maybe look at a commercial. There's better tax deductions. So like the numbers and all that, it's pretty easy to get people to look at commercial once they know what it is. Mm-hmm. And when I first started my company, like no one had a clue about commercial. Like this is just mums and dads. So, this is back in 2014. Like I remember trying to show a industrial shed to someone and, you know, you get laughed out of the room, you know. But now the market is more educated. So they mention our buyers are more educated. So that's, I think, because they've listened to this stuff.
Yeah. Well, we're doing good, mate. Maybe there's there's an award there for you.
But I don't.
Services for property related education.
You're discounting that he's not getting rewarded by his clients already.
So what did you say? 20,000 commercial sales. How many resi? 550.
On average, 550. Yeah. So imagine, my theory is, like, imagine if 100,000 of those guys, and they won't, but imagine if 100 of them start looking at commercial.
Yeah.
That's just 5X the market.
The stock's just not there from what I understand. So, you know.
Particularly that lower price point stuff that Sean was talking about before, that 500 a million or even, you know, slightly higher than that. That's the most competitive sector of the market by far, and probably where the yields have remained fairly tight because of the competition, supply and demand.
Yeah. And, you know, we were chatting earlier, there's commercial place going up all over. Everywhere I look, there's another greenfield commercial site sort of going up, or industrial site going up. And I said, they're just going, wow, it's a lot of properties coming to market. But it sounds universally that stock is really tight, Scott. Like, it's tight to get good stock. There's probably a lot of duds around. You could probably buy yourself a strata office somewhere in any place 50 kilometres out of the capital city.
I think it's one thing I was thinking of earlier. A lot of people want everything to be, even in commercial, in, you know, investment, they want it to be easy. And sometimes if you're trying to get something under $1 million, you can't expect it to be easy. So there's opportunity there, but buyers have got to be smart enough to say, okay, this could be a good little investment property, could be a good little commercial property. At the moment, it's 50% vacant, but it's in a good area. It's a bit run down. It's this. So there's opportunity for those people if they're willing to put in the work. But that's an education process in itself. So people instead, they'll go, you know what, that's too hard. I don't want to tell my friends that I've got to bloody go and paint this joint and do this to this joint. That's not real glamorous. I'll just go and buy a house that's ready to go.
But it's glamorous in residential investing, because the idea is that you want to find something which is like 100 grand below where the rest of it is. You spend 20 grand giving a lick of paint and some carpet and some new lighting, and it's up like, you know, there's a certain, I don't know if glamour's right, I think there's a certain strategy which a lot of residential property investors go at. So maybe the same's in, you know, tarting up old commercial stock, Scott.
Well, same as what Scott was saying before, though, that 550,000 residential buyers versus 20,000 commercial, it's the same with tenants. Mm. There's that same disparity. So there's a lot of people out there that need to rent a house. There's less people out there that want to get an office or workshop or whatever. So that makes the market tougher.
Well, maybe there's something we can pick up moving forward. If you've got any questions around it, or if you're doing that, let us know. But big part of what Scott was saying earlier, you know, there's a lot more people interested in commercial property, just happens to align with the fact that we launched this podcast. So maybe the timing is just serendipitous. But, you know, on that note, I think we've done a lot to expand people's views and observations towards commercial property as an asset class to invest in, you know, this catalyst or this realization that at a point in time, most resi investors, when they get a big enough portfolio, will get sick enough of that big enough portfolio that they'll start eyeing commercials. Part of their strategy might be to start preparing for a different sort of strategic future for their portfolio. So, you know, Eugene's coming all the way far down from Townsville to Toowoomba. Thanks for doing that. It's great you could make that trip to share your views and go deep into these particular markets. And yes, they do have their own dynamics and different drivers, different economic drivers and the way people sort of operate within them. But I think universally the principles are the same, right? You know, good transactional behaviours to get a deal done, but the inherent value of the asset is still key. So it should sell itself, really, if you've got good stuff, Scott.
Yeah, and like that's why when people say, oh, the market's going to fall, like you've often said, oh, the returns are worse in commercial. Mm. You know, they're not going to drop in value because of that demand. Those hundreds and hundreds of buyers for every property that's existing, especially in the cheaper price points. So the demand will prop up the prices. And once interest rates settle down or drop, you know, it will go to new heights. And when the rents are growing, that's why I'm quite bullish. Like I always said on this podcast, I'm not a forever property bull. Like I'll be the one saying, yeah, it's not time to buy when it's not time to buy. And I think that time will be when rents drop. You know, yeah. If the economy hits, let's say there's a war or there's another bloody
let's not say that.
COVID type thing. If rents all start falling 20-30%, that's when you don't buy. You sit on the sidelines, pay your debts down, just bunker down. But every single market we're looking at has upside in rents. And the ones that are less, we're less bullish about is like the office markets because there's more vacancies and stuff like that. So that's a market I'm saying don't buy. You know, this is not advice, of course, but this is just my thoughts as an investor, an active one. But these regional markets in Queensland, they're rock solid. There's not enough supply. There's, you know, the demand from tenants is creeping up as well in all asset classes. And yeah, it's just finding the stock. If we could find more of it, that would be my dream.
So putting you on the spot, Toowoomba or Townsville, where would you buy?
Look, the yields are a little better in I see less good deals in Toowoomba. There's just, like Dan mentioned, and I hadn't heard that analogy before, the privates, they seem to control that market. So it's harder for someone like myself to get in there and get a good deal because they're all just holding it blindly forever. And so the transaction volume seemed to be very low there. For a big city, you know, 120, 30-odd thousand people, there's not many good deals. I'd want more of them.
You know, say sticking up for Dan a little bit, but they're both good markets. I guess that's the biggest thing. Both Townsville and Toowoomba are both good markets, both got opportunities. And we're, you know, both Dan and I are on the ground in those areas and we're pretty keen to look after investors and put the right deals in front of them because we're, you know, both our attitude is there about long term, not short term. So we try and make sure that any investment deals we put in front of people are good quality deals that we'd be willing to buy ourselves.
I think there's massive upside in both these markets. You know, something we didn't touch on, but, you know, those construction costs are really where, what's going to be a dictating factor, some of this increase
We'll need to wait around a little bit until, you know, that's ameliorated and construction can begin again. And it will happen.
Yep.
It will happen. But there's sort of wider sort of economic challenges we're facing. But, now, gents, super informative. Thanks for some of the secret sauce. You've given a lot away, which is good. no doubt a lot of people just be sitting and going, this sounds a lot harder than what I thought of this, but, you know, keep at it, keep focused. Scott, I'm sure you can help them out. What can they do if they want to have a yarn of you? Just
info@rethinkinvesting.com or Google Rethink Investing and, yeah, leverage off our contacts like these guys. Like we work hard to get access to agents of this quality and they have good quality stock. So when we know, like they're going to get a property they could sell 50 times over when it comes up. So my job as a buyer's agent is to be considered for that, you know, because, yeah, they could sell it without us. And we want it off market so we don't have to bid against 20 others. That's also not favourable. So we, okay. Yeah.
I hope you took these guys out for a nice lunch or somewhere or other. Sounds like you're dating at the moment. But, think of me. But yeah. Look, great insights. But that's reality, how it works. You wouldn't need to be looking for every advantage you can if you want to get the best asset. So keep tuning to this podcast, Inside Commercial Property. Thanks for joining us. Remember, please keep those reviews coming wherever you tune into it. Myself and Scott, it's great to see that what we're doing in terms of helping educate you around property is resonating and you're actually taking impact and action on that. And the team also really appreciate that feedback as well. So keep those reviews coming. Scott, we'd sort of do a Q&A episode. We'll do that soon. There's lots of questions coming in. The biggest problem you're going to have is that you're probably going to get bombarded by people saying, can you find me a $1 million property at 8% in Toowoomba or Townsville?
Or hurry anywhere up, please, in Australia.
Or anywhere else in Australia. So good luck with that. You let us know how that goes. That's Inside Commercial Property. We'll see you again next time. Until then, bye-bye.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Guests appearing on this podcast may have a commercial relationship with the companies mentioned.